there is absolutely zero comparison between the nutritional matrix of dairy milk, whether or not you think it's good or bad for you, versus like a plant-based milk.
Welcome to the Wellness Breakdown, where we examine the latest health trends and we discuss how lifestyle and nutrition can truly change the way you live.
I'm Eve Kalinick. I'm a nutritional therapist, author and consultant.
And I'm Rose Ferguson. I'm a functional medicine practitioner and also an author.
Yeah, we haven't always been in this game. Rose spent most of her youth on international catwalks as one of the most iconic 90s supermodels.
I'm not sure about that. But Eve had a very hectic career as a fashion PR. So we've definitely been there, we've done it, and there is no room here to preach.
Yeah, this isn't one of those waggy finger should do podcasts. We're here to dig into some of the wellness trends, figure out whether some of this stuff is just nonsense, and give our personal and professional opinions on some of it.
It amazes me that the global wellness industry is now worth over $5 trillion. So before you go out spending your hard-earned cash on the latest new thing, make sure you listen to the Wellness Breakdown first. The Wellness Breakdown is sponsored by Ancient and Brave, a mission-driven wellness brand with an award-winning range of collagen, MCT oil, and nootropic blends. From supporting menopausal symptoms to supercharging your energy, Ancient and Brave's products are pure, potent, and easy to make part of your daily, morning, or wellness ritual.
Personally, I find the True Collagen really easy to take, and I normally add it into my morning coffee, which is a habit that I already have ingrained. I'm never going to miss my morning coffee, and it's definitely a way to maintain consistency.
Yes, well, I love collagen too, and I've been using Ancient and Brave for a very long time, and I do use it with clients, I use it for myself. I do actually love the cacao blends. I love the collagen one with cacao. Delicious.
Yeah, and what really sets them apart is their sustainability. They're a B Corp as well as a member of the 1% for the Planet. This means donating 1% of all sales to environmental causes that protect the planet, because collective action adds up. So buying their products means you're supporting the planet too. Visit 1percentfortheplanet.org to learn more. Welcome to the Wellness Breakdown. In this episode, we wanted to tackle quite a big one, and that is plant-based milk and meat.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because this time of year, at the beginning of the year, lots of people go on new plans of way to eat, and veganuary has become a big thing. Actually, I've heard less about it this year than I normally would.
Yeah,
maybe that's because I'm ignoring it.
I mean, I don't know. I'm sure you get this as well, Rose, in your practice or when you're doing events or any sort of event or anything like that. I think people just really like, you know, is going plant-based the answer? And I just think my answer to that is there is not a binary answer. I think it's entirely individualistic. Like, I don't think everybody's going to suit that diet. I don't think necessarily everybody should necessarily need to be doing that diet, because I think there's also a massive difference between having a plant-based diet that is predominantly focused on whole foods versus one that is heavily reliant on ultra-processed fake meats and the milks and things, which is basically what we're kind of focusing on this episode, not necessarily plant-based eating overall. So
yeah, I mean, I have to say that I did an Instagram post on plant milks, and it is the most viewed Instagram post I've ever done.
Wow.
Saying, watch what you're drinking, because not all plant-based milks are born equal. A lot of them have a lot of crap in them. They have a lot of crappy fats in them to make them frothy or to make them feel creamier or richer. You can get ones that are literally just almonds, water, and a bit of sea salt, or oats, sea salt, and a bit of water. But you have to really look. I would say one in five are like that. The rest of them are full of utter crap.
Yeah.
You know, and people were like, I had no idea. I didn't know, because they're advertised and portrayed as being a healthier option.
Yeah.
You know, this is where I feel really irritated, because we see people all the time who feel like they're doing the right thing. You know, they're eating low fat, they're eating or whatever it is. But, you know, they're drinking plant milk because they think it's better than normal milk. And actually they're being spun a yarn, because, you know, they're drinking absolute rubbish full of chemicals and rubbish that they don't need.
There is some hoodwinking that goes on with marketing. So I totally agree with you there. And what really really grinds on me is the fact that these milks are like three times the price of dairy milk, which is insane when you think about the processing that needs to happen and what's actually in the milk. Because the nutritional matrix, there is absolutely zero comparison between the nutritional matrix of dairy milk, whether or not you think it's good or bad for you, versus like a plant-based milk. It's just, it's mostly water, to be honest. So I think there's that. And so I feel that there's massive, was kind of ethical issues there, and like, why are you charging people that amount of money for something that is essentially water with a bit of oats or nuts in it, you know? But then at the same time, you know, look, there's a lot of people that do feel like milk, dairy milk, doesn't suit them.
Yeah, I was going to say also the quality of milk differs. You know, in America and the UK, milk is very, very processed. If you go to France, and it's much less processed. So there are lots of reasons why dairy milk can be untolerated by people.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, if you take something like a generic skim milk that's on the supermarket shelf, that's going to have had lots of processing to get to that point. So you might think of that, oh, it's just milk, there's nothing to it. But actually what's happened is the fat's been taken out, it's been homogenized, which means that it's a highly pressured processing method that means that the fat gets evenly distributed in the milk. So yeah, do you remember when we were kids and you used to have the milk and it would have the cream at the top? So, but what you do then is you change the nutritional, the composition of the milk. So that makes it harder for our body to then digest those fats because it's been processed. And then by law, you know, milk needs to be pasteurized. So that's basically killing off the lactase in there. And that's the enzyme that we need to break down lactose. Now, as a lot of us get older, we produce less amounts of lactase. And particularly if you've got something like IBS or small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, you can really struggle because you're not producing enough of that enzyme, because it's actually immediately produced when you ingest milk. So there's a lot of reasons why the milk on the supermarket shelf, like if it's really processed like that, like a skimmed milk versus one that is less processed, like for instance, if we were to take a whole milk that was unhomogenized, that's had a lot less processing in it. So I think even within the milk, dairy milk itself, you can have an option that is much less processed versus one that is highly processed, and that will impact on how well we're able to digest and absorb that.
Yeah.
Like if you're from Asia or Africa, or certain parts of Asia and Africa anyway, genetically you'll really struggle to break that down. So that's to do with the lactose in it. But the other part of it is the protein, so casein or whey, and some people struggle with that as well. So I think again, it's like people don't understand exactly why they're not digesting the milk, and it's important to understand that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a fan of dairy milk at all, really. I think it's very processed. When I work with parents who are concerned about their kids and congestion and they have candlesticks coming out their nose, I might take them off dairy and see how you get on. And often that can just cause a lot of congestion.
Just be mindful when you drink. If you're getting a lot of mucus production, like it's obviously not going to suit you. But then what you need to do is take it out completely for at least 6 weeks to understand whether or not you do have an issue with dairy milk. But yeah, if you're taking that out, so if you're taking dairy milk out, it's just about making sure that you get some of those nutrients through other sources.
Yeah. I mean, so something like calcium, which is obviously what people talk about with dairy, you can also, things like seeds have, you know, sesame seeds in particular have a high dose, high amounts. You can add tahini to things, you know, but you do have to be a bit conscious. And I definitely agree that plant milk doesn't have the nutritional profile. But I don't think it's as inflammatory or irritating as dairy milk. And the other thing I would say about plant milk is the environmental factor. So I know that, for example, almond milk, it takes a whole lot of water to make almonds. That's definitely something I think about for sure. And something when I talk to my clients, I say to think about, because it is an environment, the environmental impact of this huge rise of suddenly almond milk is not insignificant.
I also think we also need to acknowledge that the dairy industry is massively flawed as well. Mm. You know, there is real environmental concerns there. And I guess from an ethical perspective, some people find it weird drinking milk from a cow, which I can understand to a point as well. So it's such a complex thing. And you're right, like in terms of like, I think calcium is sort of heralded as the reason why we were brought up to like drink milk because it's good for your bones, and certainly is a really good source of calcium. It's also a good source of iodine and amino acids and things like that, which you're not going to get in your plant-based milks. And, you know, the absorption on it is pretty decent. It's about 30%. But you are actually going to get more absorption, even if the amount is lower in certain leafy greens. Mm. Pak choy and all those, the Chinese greens, which I absolutely bloody love. So, and things like tofu, actually, they are higher, even though comparatively it could be lower, particularly the greens. So yeah. You can get it, but you just obviously need to make sure that you are having those foods. And I mean, I need no excuse to start shoving tahini into anything and everything, to be honest with you. Bloody love it.
But actually, it does bring us back round to what we're sort of talking about, because the thing is that if you are going to cut out food groups, then you better be making sure you're replacing them. So this is one of the problems I see, and I'm sure you see, are that people are doing plant-based, but they're not doing it well. They're eating lots of processed stuff, which where the nutrient profile is very low. They're not nutrient dense foods. So they're not getting what you would get from, say, a steak. They're buying some fake meat or something like that, which has all the opposite effects of, you know, really nice grass-fed steak. Mm-hmm. And thinking that they're being healthier. And that's just really misleading. And I definitely blame the food industry for that. It really pisses me off.
Yeah. I won't call out a big supermarket chain on here, but I was walking around the fruit and vegetable section and there was a bag of carrots that had plant-based written on it. And it was like comparatively like three times the price as the loose carrots. Again, because it's
that's
got
outrageous
like buzzwords on it. So, and I, by the way, both of us are 100% alike. We should have more plants in our diet.
100%.
I mean, I don't think either one of us are saying that, right? So, but I just think the way that the hyphenated plant-based has been spun is really, really, I feel very misleading.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, yeah, finishing off on the conversation around dairy as well, it's like, you know, if you're swapping that out, you need to just make sure that you are finding those other nutrients somewhere else. You know, like you said, on the meat conversation, it's the same thing. You know, there's very little foods actually that can provide the same amount of nutritional value apart from organ meats. And I am talking about good quality red meat here. And I think we need to obviously talk about quality. And again, like we have done with the milk, is that it does provide so much nutritional value. It's almost impossible to find a food that will stack up against that. Yeah. So if you're going to then sub that out for something else, then you've got to make sure that you do get some of those nutrients, particularly in plant-based diets where it will naturally be very much lower in things like B12, for instance. We know that almost impossible, really. I mean, you can get some, I think, a bit in seaweed, but it's very low. But, you know, looking at some of those plant-based burgers, they have like 21 or more ingredients. It's insane. Like, you know, some of those you can't even pronounce.
I know. Well, I know a bit about plant-based burgers because I had a plant-based burger company for a moment with Gizzy Erskine.
Yes, you did, which was delicious.
Thank you. And it was really good, unfortunately, due to differences, not between me and Gizzy, but between someone else. It didn't continue. But the burger itself, developing it was really interesting because obviously we compared, we tasted everything, we looked at everything. And the reason that me and her were working together is because she's a chef. So she wanted to put in, I mean, she is a fantastic cook, I have to say, but it's like rich, rich, rich. And I was like, health, health, health. And somewhere in the middle, we found a burger that was made with basically lentils. You could pronounce everything in it, but it was very difficult to do.
Yeah.
And it was really expensive, actually. But then you look at the alternative plant-based burgers out there, and it's so shocking what's in them,
yeah,
pretending to be sort of healthy options. But they are cheaper, and it is expensive when you're trying to do a decent one. The only other one that I know, because we're talking about burgers, is the Simplicity Burger,
okay,
which is really interesting because that is Chef Neil Rankin's brainchild, and it's delicious, but it's also made from ferments.
Right, okay.
So, you know, so I suppose, sorry, going back to the Filth Burger, we wanted it to have enough protein in it. We wanted it to have enough fibre. We wanted it to sort of be comparable to a meat burger, which obviously it couldn't be on things like the protein front, but we gave it a good try.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's just, it is more difficult if you're trying to reach the same nutrient levels as, you said, meat or fish or things like that. It's quite difficult, and you really need to be prepared, I'd say, is one thing. So when people are eating more plants in my clinic, I'm always like, just get prepared, make sure you it's really, really a healthy way to live. It's a very, and for some people, they don't want that. Mm. You know, telling someone to eat nuts and seeds and lentils and legumes, they're just like, what? They don't even know what that food is. They will eat pizza and pasta and toast.
Yeah.
And that's plant-based.
Yeah.
Or fake meats.
Yeah, and there's the, like, not just the burgers, there's the, like, the bacons and all of that. And I think, honestly, if you were to look at the ingredients, like, they are really problematic, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, depending on where you read around this subject, and this is where I find it personally, even as, and we're in this field, I find it incredibly confusing. I do abhor lots of the propaganda type documentaries that are just not balanced at all around this subject. I really do, because I don't think it's as black and white as some of them make it out to be. We should have more of a kind of balanced conversation around this and think more about eating better and eating less and understanding how we feed into a more robust, regenerative agricultural system, which potentially includes some animal consumption. So,
yeah.
But yeah, like some of the, if you were just to eat, and I have seen this in my practice where, again, with all good intentions, clients going, I'm going to go 100% plant-based. And then they end up having basically a chemical diet predominantly because they're relying on a lot of these products. And by the way, no one's suggesting here that, you know, these products are harmful or anything like that. But it's just more, again, about the load. One of these in a blue moon.
No, you're being diplomatic. Once in a blue moon.
You know, because we're going to have some ultra processed. But I have seen clients that are eating that, like, you know, day in, day out. You know, because there is a real concern also around soy and what's happening in order to produce that. I mean, some people would argue, it's feeding cattle. But there is a huge, there's an insatiable need now around because of all of this stuff to produce these products. So again, I think we need to be a bit like thinking a bit more bigger picture.
I feel like soy gets a bad rap from a point of view of people saying it's not good for you. Again, it is the quality of it. It is not that soy, it's like you find an organic fermented soy piece of tofu, it'll be three times the price because it's farmed in a very, very different way, but its nutritional qualities are much, much better.
Yeah.
And soy is not, talking about endocrine disruptors in our last episode, it can be. So for somebody with a thyroid issue, you should be careful around soy. But for a lot of people and a lot of plant-based people, organic fermented soy is a really good source of protein.
Yeah.
And plant-based protein. So things like tempeh, things like tofu.
Miso.
It's quite hard to get. But there's a company called Typhon, which I use. Buying unprocessed stuff, which is not mass made, is more expensive. But if you buy it less often and buy better quality, that is really the answer, I would say, to even if you're eating meat or plant-based, it's for both.
Yeah, I mean, like, to differentiate that further, what we're talking about really is junky soy stuff, you know, like the highly processed milks, yogurts, desserts, that's and the burgers and the meats and that type of thing. But if you're eating it in the way that soy has been eaten, obviously, in Asian culture for, millennia, like, you buy meat, you buy good quality tofu, like. And actually, some of the big supermarkets are selling, decent quality tofu. You know, there's one called Tofu.
Tofu, yeah.
Or it's tofu, but it's spelled with
T-O-O-F-O.
Yeah, and they're organic. They have a tempeh as well.
Yeah.
So you can get those in, like, Ocado, most of the supermarkets. I quite like Delish Liella's, actually. Her tofu is really nice. That's organic as well.
Oh, I haven't tried hers.
And there's one called Clean Bean, but it's really hard to get a hold of. But I've sort of, in the comparison between meat and non-meat, I see it as the Wagyu of, like, tofu. It's so good. It has so much nutritional value.
Yeah, it does. But I do think, and I think in terms of, if you want to be plant-based, then you need to be thinking about beans and legumes. Mm. And that is a really important part, I would say. And if, you know, when we're saying taking out food groups, if you're going to just stop eating food and start eating non-foods like fake meat, then that's probably not a very good decision to make.
Yeah.
If you are going to move to plant-based, then you need to really be opening your brain up to things like chickpea stew, lentil dal, mung bean casserole, whatever it is. But you really need to be getting to grips with using those foods, how to cook those foods. I mean, you can get, actually, there is a lot of options out there. You know, if you're running late and you need to buy something quickly, you know, Pret has a chickpea salad, all those things. But I would say that your preparation skills need to be more on point if you're going to do plant-based in the right way.
Yeah, like you're right. I mean, and, you know, I guess in terms of like how do you navigate some of the products, and obviously not all the products like in the supermarket that have plant-based on them are full of shit, but a lot of them are.
That's true.
So, you know, I guess it's just about...
We've really slated it, haven't we?
Anything in the supermarket's got plant-based on it, although that carrot bag was really ridiculous.
I was going to say... Yeah. Carrots having plant-based on them, it's like, what else are they in that case?
I mean, I was a bit like, WTF. But yeah, if there's a whole load of ingredients on there that you don't recognise as things you might have in your cupboard, just don't buy it, basically. But that's true for any processed food, you know, not just the plant-based ones. But I'd say if it's got loads of things like maltodextrins and emulsifiers and God knows whatever else in it, isolate things, just kind of like, steer away from that. You know, if you like the taste of bacon, you can make things like coconut bacon. It's actually really easy to make. I think I've, in my first book, I did like a tempeh Reuben sandwich. I think I put some, anyway, it's easy to make. You basically get coconut chips and you just put some like coconut aminos or soy sauce on it and some paprika and cumin, something like that. And then you just bung it in the oven for a bit and you get a sort of similar like smoky taste and things like that. But I've yet to find a plant-based bacon that tastes like bacon and isn't like massively full of these chemicals. So I'd just be like, yeah, have a look. If you don't recognize the ingredient, knock it on the head and go to the legumes section.
Well, thank you everyone for listening. I think we've well and truly slated the fake meat market. I feel good about that. We've had a few emails about the last episode.
Right. Hi, Eve and Rose. I've just been listening to your episode on fertility. Thank you so much for highlighting this. I've had IVF 4 times before finally having twins. Oh, amazing. I feel so lucky, but it was a tough time. The hardest for me was the emotional side. Yeah, we talked about that. Where there was no support. Considering the cost of these treatments, you'd think that that would be high up on their agenda. Oh, yeah. I wish you luck, Eve, on your journey. Miriam. Oh, that's really sweet. I kind of... do agree with that.
Yeah, no.
Actually,
I know. Well, you really responded to that when we mentioned it in that episode. There's another email here from Carla, and she says, "Hi, ladies. My daughter is just starting her IVF journey on her own, so I have passed on your episode to her to listen to. It was really interesting to hear about the hormone tests. You are right. No one talks about this until they are struggling to conceive. Early intervention is definitely the way to go. I would be interested to hear how you get on, Eve." Carla. Yeah, early intervention is, you know, or just early knowledge. Yeah. It doesn't mean you have to intervene, but just knowing where you're at, so it doesn't come as a shock when you're ready to conceive.
I think we just, as women, we just need to empower ourselves right from our first period, basically. And actually, even beyond fertility into menopause, like we only start talking about menopause when we're there, but actually menopause really starts, you know, it's a journey. It starts from when we first start period. So I think, yeah, we need to just, yeah. I'm glad the conversation's definitely opening up a bit more around this whole topic. I think it's got a long way to go, as we talked about, but it's just about empowerment really, isn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, and thank you so much for your emails. They, you know, we love hearing from you guys.
It's such a biggie. Like, I don't feel like we've really even scratched the surface of plant-based milks and meats, and both of us acknowledge that there are huge amounts of ethical debates around either side that like are just like we're never going to fit into even a whole season really. But would love to hear your guys' thoughts on it. Maybe you found some products that actually aren't full of shit that we'd like to hear about. I'm joking.
Yes.
Or just sharing recipes. I know Rose has got tons of amazing ones. I'm always like literally salivating when I watch her on Instagram with her amazing plant-based recipes. So maybe we can chuck a few out there for you guys to try.
That's a good idea. We'll do one each because Evil's also got her fair share of recipes, let's be honest.
Oh yeah, the air fry tofu, game changing that one, guys. Yeah.
Oh yes, do that. That sounds delicious.
Well, that's it. Thanks everyone for joining us on the Wellness Breakdown. We really hope you've enjoyed this episode.
To follow the show, go to the show page and click on the plus sign. And we're also on YouTube, and that is the Wellness Breakdown Pod. Or you can email us. We really love hearing from you. Email us at info@thewellnessbreakdown.co.uk or message us on our Instagram.
See you next week.
Bye.